Tupou driving hard at the line. Tupou, has he done it? No, it's play on. They go wide. They go wide. They get the try. It's O'Connor for Queensland.
Welcome to episode 38 of the Rugby Fixation. We're back. We're joined by Curtis Evans, the co-host. He's had a bit of a break, but he's looking ready. I know you can't see this, but he's looking primed to talk about the Wallabies and their recent series win over France. So, Curdy, what did you think of that series?
Yeah, it's good to be back. Been a big hiatus, but happy to be back on and talking rugby, and I'm much happier talking after a win. It was massive. It was a very big win. There's somehow, I think it's... I've thought it was just Wallabies fans. I think it's all sporting fans across the world now, but the people find a way to turn wins into negatives. But we're winning. We're moving up the world rankings. We found out we have the world's best player in Michael Hooper. That was reassuring. We found out that our sort of tackle methodology is all sort of under control, because World Rugby overturned Marika Korobeti's decision, which is sort of priming us for the Bledisloe, having now our second star sort of being available to play for a couple of games against the All Blacks and the Springboks and the Argentines. So very keen for that. But the French series, great test for a lot of players, including the French. I was very, very impressed by the French. Their depth is phenomenal, and I'm putting them top seed for 2023 and 2027 World Cup at the minute. Because that third string, it started off people saying it's their B side. It turned into a D side after we'd won the series. I don't know how that happens, but they're phenomenal. Their defense is very, very good. They're obviously some decision making, but they've got some great players and leaders coming into the team. That some they probably got three players that would be knocking on the door of making the World 15. So I think it'll be very exciting to see them at their full strength. But for Wallabies, young team, a lot to like about how we played.
I really think it's the kind of game that I'd love to see us play them when we go to Europe at the end of the year, like to see them at full strength and get a game against them in France. Because, yeah, it's very different beating them on home soil and, without some of their stars. But I think you're right. Like, even though they might not be all their first-choice players, there were some real talented players in that mix. Like, every back row they picked was solid. Jonathan Danty at inside centre was a freak. Sebastian Kuyu and the halfback, he was unreal. And Melvin Jaminet at fullback, I thought was awesome as well. So just they did have a lot of really enterprising players. And I think people that probably did stick their hand up to make it into that French 23 and probably a few starters as well. Look, what we don't want to talk about, we'll try and make this one brief as we cover that French series. Because if you've been following along with... myself on the Pick and Drive Rugby podcast, we've covered a lot of that with Benny Alexander when we were doing our previews and reviews of all the French games. And Ben Alexander was great to chat to with all that stuff. So, Cody, I'm going to ask you, just as someone that's, spent a bit of time at hooker, what did you make of Brandon Pangaramo? So I thought we'll get him out of the way, because hooker was a position we were a bit, interested in at the start. How did you find his series?
I'm going to just double back on myself and be one of those people that talks negatively about after a win. But I personally don't really think he offers that much. I won't say anything. He does offer... I thought he was improved in terms of his set piece, which I think is obviously a massive part of being a hooker. I think in the series, he only had two lineouts that went astray, which is pretty good for Australian standards. Scrums, he's obviously heavy, and he's scrummed a fair bit with Tupou in his time, and probably even a couple of years now in camp with the other boys. So I think they're his positives. Around the park, I think very bad. I think he had a very poor series around the park. He can't affect clean outs on outside backs. He comes in half from the side on them, gets away with not getting penalised, but still can't clean them out and waits for help. And then when he's running, he's in open play, he's almost looking like he's running with a pick and drive, and he's trying to get underneath the defensive player and has no intention of
breaking the line or anything. All he's trying to do is get good ball, which that can happen sometimes, but you need to actually have a crack as well. I'd also say he's the type of player whose stats look better, make him look like he's played a better game than he has. He does get involved in some tackles, which is fine. I think we really, like, if you look at the impact that Tolu Lati would have had on that team, just gives Hooper, like, Hooper's still affected. I think he got 6 turnovers across the 3 games. Latu's getting 6 as well. And the impact that, like, he's getting as many as Hooper. And you see the impact that other teams have when they've got a second pilfer in their pack, plus someone that's got a higher work rate. I think that's where we really missed out. But in fairness to BPA, set piece is what you ask for. And as a Wallabies fan, I've been very disgruntled with the amount of lineouts that have gone skew if and the amount of scrums we've lost. So that was vastly improved. Partly is that we were up against a poor French side. Maybe they hadn't had as much lineout and scrum training. They were in quarantine for a fair bit of their time in Oz. But I don't think we're at a huge loss from him going overseas. But in saying that, Lonergan was not up to par when he came on, and Willessie and Fanger have sort of not looked in favour under Rennie at all. So it'll be interesting to see. I just don't think we have a clear standout that's playing in Australia at the moment and available.
Well, that's the issue we've been talking about, is out of the 3 players that got some game time, we still got to chuck in Kaitu'u, McInerney, Parecki, Murphy, Fanger into that mix. And really, none of them stand out as the must-have, but at the same time, I don't think any of them would really offend me if they were named as the starting hooker. They're all sort of in around that same sort of area. I think that's really going to be the crunch call. Look, I started with BPA because I knew that you didn't have the best thoughts on him just based off some of our group chats, and he was quite slow receiving some of the ball out on the wing. Like, he was trying to play that sort of Dane Coles way without having the same speed or running style. But yeah, what did you like outside of Hooper, who I think we've both covered as just phenomenal and walking into World 15s at the moment with his form? What else did you like from the Wallabies?
I am overwhelmed with our prop depth. It is phenomenal to have Slipper and Tupou, or Slipper and Alatoa start a game, and then Tupou and Alatoa, Tupou or Alatoa and Bell come on off the bench is just phenomenal. Like, we can't sort of get over how lucky that makes us. We can have a starting front row and a bench front row that can win penalties at any stage of the game, plus all very high work rate players.
I just want to jump in because that also had CO injured. So, like, we didn't even have, you know, our second most experienced prop and our third most experienced player available as well. Do you have any concerns about our depth part? Like, just say, for example, something happened to either of our tight heads. Would you be confident with Pony Farmasuli or, you know, Harry Johnson-Holmes, who wasn't even in the squad, coming in and doing a job there?
Harry Johnson-Holmes, definitely. He's a Wallaby already, and he was much, much better than Pone this year in Super Rugby. He's the best pick and driver. He's a better pick and driver than Tony Olatupo. If the two of them are at the base of a ruck near the try line, you're picking Harry Johnson-Holmes every day of the week to go over.
Wow, a big call.
He's scored 4 tries this year from pick and drives. And every time he got near the line, you're going, all right, give it to him now. And he just gets underneath and sort of shunts himself over. From anywhere outside 1 meter, I'd give it to him. But I think, and Harry Johnson-Holmes, your perfect 6th prop, I guess, whatever you're taking to a World Cup, because he was a very good loose head. And then Waratahs had Robertson and Bell. And then Robertson left and Johnson-Holmes just found tight head, and he's performed really well there, put on a couple of kegs, and I think he was very unlucky to not make the Wallaby squad.
Yeah. Well, look, while we're on this, we may as well just go through positions, because we're going to talk about sort of what we liked and what we didn't like, and also some things that you want for the Rugby Championship. And I think we sort of covered prop and hooker pretty well. For locks, obviously, Salika Lodo's an automatic pick, just based on the people we've got around. I know you're pretty keen, and I'm pretty keen on having some of those overseas players back, but how do you think Phillip and Swain went? And, you know, were you overly bothered that Tamani didn't get a crack?
I was originally excited to see Tamani, and that was just purely based on form. But I think the right decision was made on leaving him on the pine because he won't be around for that long. And I think I'm hopeful that there's been some big plays made at our overseas locks to get them home. So Luke Arm's good. I didn't think he had the world's best first game, but he was very good in the next two. And I was sort of that. What's the big French Tongan prop? Taufa Fanua. Taufa Fanua. He was for me the best lock on tour, and he is the poor man's Will Skelton in the French comp.
Yeah,
he gets bossed around by Skelton. Skelton plays that same sort of abrasive game, but does it a lot better over in France, and that just makes you watching his like impact on our. On our back rowers and our forward runners just makes you go, get us Skelton and Arnold back now. Yeah. But I thought Luke Arm was much improved and sort of muscled up a lot more and was sort of doing a lot heavier work in game two and three. Philip, high work rate player again, can't sort of underestimate the fact that he's been back in Australia for less than a month before the game played. I think he's back for about 2.5 weeks before the game played. So yeah, he was going to be rusty, and he came in at the start and played pretty big minutes. So he was fine. He didn't impress. Wasn't as good as he was last year, but I think that's fine. Yeah. Swain, very good in his last games. Not as sort of quick. He's sort of a bit sluggish for me. Maybe that's just a step up to Test rugby, but he was very good. I really liked just his niggle as well. It was like when. To a lot lesser extent, when Swinton started playing Super Rugby, and it's just like pushing people on the ground and holding them down for a little bit longer. Maybe that's part fatigue and sort of trying to take a little bit longer to get up, or maybe it is also just let's get in their heads and let's rattle them, because the French can give away red cards as well. So I really liked that part of his game where he was sort of into the French, and his lineouts were immense and high work rate around the park. So I think if you're talking about whatever he is, a 22-year-old playing for the Wallabies in his first ever season, very good. If you're talking about confidence in him being a Rugby World Cup 2023 starting lock, I'd say he's not there yet, but I'm happy to keep him around. And this is the conversation where I sort of flag to you, but we need to know who's coming back.
Yeah.
Because the reality is if we have the pick of the litter, maybe Lucan makes our four locks to go to France, because Skelton, Arnold, Rodder, and other Arnold Coleman, and or any of our current locks in Australia are sort of fighting for that. Probably I'd say maybe third and fourth, but definitely fourth position. But yeah. Skelton and Arnold are outrageous at the moment.
One of the things I just want to touch just with Philip is, so we've had 9 games with Rennie, and Hooper's started every match. Corabetti started every match. Paisami's been in the 23 every match. Same with Tupou and Alalatoa. But Philip is the only lock that's been in every match day squad. So clearly Rennie sees something in him that he quite likes, whether it's his line-out work or something like that, because he got up for a few steals across the series and he's been pretty good. So I'm keen to see what they do with it. But I think it's something that I flagged on Twitter a bit. I really liked how Rennie had a squad of 39 players, it was probably over 40 by the time he added in all the people that came in through injury, and he only used 27. So I really like that he's got a clear idea of who he wants to use. It wasn't just handing out caps to, whoever wanted it. It was, really looking to, now these guys, you're here to train and like you have a chance, but you've got to beat this top tier that I've got sort of mapped out. And speaking of, this is probably the position where I feel like we saw the most growth, and I was so happy with how they went. The back row, obviously, Hooper's a standout. He's starting at 7. Every game he's healthy, just based off what he can do. But then to not only have a great 6 and 8 in Valentini and Wilson, but then to also have Swinton and Nicerani come on, I thought that was just awesome depth. Like all 5 of those back rowers were amazing. My only issue is that we didn't get any more game time given to McWright. So I know you're a big fan of those back rowers as well. You're also a massive fan of Hooper. Do you see any chance that McWright gets some game time coming from the Rugby Championship? Or how do you develop someone who is stuck behind an 80-minute player who, you know, is one of the best players in Australia, if not, you know, the world.
Ask the Waratahs and how many number sevens they let go over the 6-7 years of Hooper. First question is McWright the next best seven? And he's not, in my opinion. But the Liam Wright new contract signing of just for an extra year, sort of, I saw a Twitter pop up saying this could be potentially because he didn't get an RA top up and he's looking for an RA top up next year. So if that is, I don't, that could just be someone making something up, but I don't know. If that is the case, then geez, that's concerning for me. Scott Young and Wright aren't two players you want leaving Australian rugby, especially when, for me, Wright, he's played more games for Wallabies than McWright. He's captained the Super Rugby side. He's got more experience. And for me, he's a more rounded player. And you don't, like, McWright got sent back to Premier Grade to learn how to tackle big blokes last year. Thorn dropped him to say, mate, like, you're not sort of being dominant enough in this Trans-Tasman game to get back and play some club rugby and brothers. He's still a very good player. Very, very good player. But I don't know if you're sort of hanging your hat on him as the guy just yet to be the one that replaces Hooper and sort of giving him minutes every game.
Well, on that then, because he's not going to fit on the bench, really, if we're not going to just carry a general seven. With Naisirani going overseas, is your 20, would you give it to Swinton because he's in the squad, or do you think bringing someone like Pete Sarmo, who's probably a bit more versatile?
Yeah, Pete Sarmo for me. But I don't know what happened there last year. We've sort of spoken about it a bit. But
yeah,
Pete Sarmo is that 6-7-8 cover, and he's good at all, and he can play tight and he can play wide. So for me, he's the 20. All wrong is just a work rate player that's going to be good in your set piece and sort of probably affect maybe a late turnover. But Pete Sarmo for me, or dare I say, Sean McMahon come home.
You've just named everyone that's overseas. You know what? And this might be, because normally I try and keep my hot takes to, a minimum, but what about converting Pete Sarmo to a hooker? Because I'm just thinking about seeing Pete Sarmo on the wing when he's, you know, gets a ball out there for the Brumbies. That's where he's the most damaging. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, BPA is trying to do. Could we get him to throw a ball in a line out and, you know, hooking a scrum?
He's only about 7 inches taller than Tupo.
Yeah. I mean, Ulysses, what? He's probably 7 inches taller than Tupo as well.
I think Ulysses is probably 6'3". Yeah.
So I know that's not going to happen, but gee, tell me I'm wrong. That's not a bad idea. Pete Sarmo for hooker.
I'd love that.
If you're on board, retweet, like when you see this on Twitter. Get it out there. Pete deserves a shot at the number 2 jersey. If nothing more than for the tucked in pants and how well he runs on the side. We'll go through the back line. You got to be happy with the number of minutes that Jake Gordon got, because you're a big advocate for him starting over McDermott before the series started. Personally, and I think universally, it's sort of determined that McDermott had a better series. But I was saying on the Pick and Drive podcast that how good is it that both of them got over 100 minutes each? Like, they split the game time really well. They're both a lot more experienced for it. I think Gordon really recovered well from what was a pretty bad game one into having a solid game two. And he was really good off the bench in the third game. So I guess for you, Cody, Bledisloe 1 coming up. Nick White seems to be healthy for it. Are you presumably starting White, and who gets on your bench?
Yeah, I'm starting White and I'm putting McDermott on the bench.
Hey, after the weekend. Converted.
It goes back to the Gordon was the better player going into the series. So picking the team, I still think, like, obviously there's a lot of flack. I still think Gordon was made the most sense to be picked at 9. And we've seen them both play against the same team, and McDermott did a better job. So that's like fine to put him in. McDermott, I would say, maybe took a few too many steps and Gordon didn't do enough. So neither of them, I don't think either of them are playing as good as they do at club level still. But
yeah,
compare the pair on how they're playing the same team, McDermott was definitely better. And also McDermott's more of a bench player than Gordon. So he'll provide a lot more excitement off the bench than Gordon would have, I think.
when you compare the pair, like McDermott's with an industry super fund, so he's always going to do a little bit better.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you did that for anyone lucky enough, privileged enough to see the video content. You get a great little snapshot of that. look, on top of the halves, we had Noah Lolasio. I thought he did an awesome job and grew each game. His goal kicking was just an absolute stunner. And that's something that I think we've, really backed Will Harrison for previously. And I know, you know, Will Harrison's probably in the same discussions for Lolasio in terms of that young up-and-coming 10.
If you're asking Nelson.
Yeah. I mean, Nelson and Harry, especially from draft, like they'll have him starting any day now. But I think they're right. I think one of the points that Nelson said is he should be in the squad at least. Like, we should be getting these guys minutes and game time. And at the very least, they should know all the plays and what's happening. So in the event that Lolasio goes down, like, what's your backup? Because we shouldn't rely on, you know, Hodge coming in. And we haven't seen probably the best from Tamua. So I'm quite happy to see Harrison in there.
Agreed. But, and if you compare the options are being a Wallaby squad, train in a professional environment.
Yeah.
Or train three times a week and play shoot on the weekend.
Well, I think in spite of all that, though, James O'Connor still starts when healthy. He just had such an unbelievable season. But I thought what an awesome confidence booster for Lolasio. And what a great series he had. Like he's really come quite a long way, I think, from his test debut, which, you know, is never easy against the All Blacks. But actually, I should mention, I don't know if I've spoken to you about it, that All Blacks debut that he had. Do you remember which city that was played in?
No.
That was Sydney.
So, we drew it.
No.
No?
That was a first test. That was the one we lost.
Oh, that's right.
We lost 43 to 5 in Sydney.
We got pumped.
Bit of a trend. Losing down in Sydney.
Yeah, we can't play down there.
I'm glad, even though you're a Tars fan, that you hate Sydney, is what I'm hearing. Then you want all the tests at Suncorp. Look, if we go to centres, I've been asking you a lot of questions. I'll pipe up and say for the centres, I was actually a little disappointed we didn't get a bit more oomph from any of the combinations. And the last game, obviously, it's very hard to do when your two starting wingers are off for the whole match and you don't have the same attacking opportunities. But in the first two matches, I think what we saw was that Paisami should be playing at 12. I don't think he had any of the same time or space to work with that we see in Super Rugby. And that's only exaggerated when he's out at 13 and he's getting two passes before, you know, really rush defense jams it on him, because he had a lot of runs, but really not for a lot of effect. And I just don't think we saw the best of him at 13. So I really like the look of persevering with the Paisami and Ikitea combination, or Parisi, getting him in at 13 if he's healthy. But Cody, I want to throw to you, because you were quite a big fan of Tuamua and him getting a crack at 12 just for the experience. Are you still sticking with that, or have you seen enough from the others and from him to decide maybe it's time to move to the younger centres?
This is the toughest question of them all, because if you look at look, first of all, I would say Ikitau aside, I'd say all of our centers were underwhelming. That was one of the underwhelming parts. I think Paisami was, I found, quite unimpressive this year. He's in my overhyped going into the series and underwhelmed for me. He was a lot better last year. Maybe it was that sort of fresh face. Maybe it was the new combinations. Maybe it was a different team and didn't know anything about his opposition. It's a lot of factors, and the reality is it's his second year. So you can't have any, like, it's not a crack at him at all, but he looked for contact and ran across field to find it. And I reckon that's the last thing you're doing as a center. Look at how all the, he's not a big center either. He's strong, yes, yeah, but he's not a big center. Like, you can't be doing that. And it's almost, for me, he's either passing as soon as he gets it and you can sort of see the shaping in his hand. He's got the ball in both hands, or he tucks it straight away and you can just tell he's running directly into someone. So, yeah, me, that he's got a lot to work on. He's a young player. Like, he will work on that. But for me, he's not in a position yet where I'm building a back line around him. And I think the stability And Tamil is out of form at the moment, but that's not to say he's a bad player and he can't play a good game. So I think like Tamil got a lot of flack, at least in our, I don't know about broader scope, but in our internal chats, he got a bit of flack saying he's not what he used to be and like sort of move aside and let these young, exciting setters come through. But for me, Parisi was better than Paisami and Ikitau throughout the Super Rugby series, definitely towards the end. So if you're talking form, your best 13 is unavailable. If you're talking form that dates 2 years, Pattaya was the best, and he was rushed in to play 13 in a World Cup quarterfinal, and he's like, I guess he's got other options, and it's sort of talking about fullback, and he can play right wing, but there's sort of two options that are at least equal with our two other options that are playing 13 at the moment. So I think there just needs to be a decision on sort of who's a 13, who's a 12, who's a winger, and then build up around that. But I just think you're definitely in the camp, but I think on the field you sort of want that leader when you've got, say, for the last game, obviously we ended up winning, so it's retrospect, maybe I was wrong, but Tate had played 3 games for the Wallabies, Lalesio had played 4, Paisami had played less than 10, I'm guessing. Played 1 season, maybe he played bang on 10.
Six.
Six. There you go.
Before the series started, yeah.
Yeah. So Ikitau had played a couple of minutes, and Dalgunu had played less than 10, probably 5 games. And Corabetti was our only leader, he got red carded, and Banks was at the back. So for me, that's obviously, we ended up winning, but before the game, I thought that is way too inexperienced to be going up against a team. And you sort of want a leader in there. So, I don't know. Retrospect, could have got it wrong. We won, so I'm not as fussed now. If we lost, that's probably what it would have been saying.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things with that red card. I think it's sort of been brushed under the rug a little bit because we get Corabetti back and we won. But you can imagine how different that is if that's, you know, ends up being the reason why we lost the series. They're outside backs. Obviously, Corin Betty's he's nailed on as a starter. Like, he was just such a freak of those first 2 games. The right wing, Tom Wright, it didn't get really much of a chance to shine. Made a few errors, and I think just sort of hampered his confidence a little bit. Dunguno obviously got 30 seconds before his tackle, so that wasn't ideal. Are you racing Jordy Pattaya or Suli Vunivalu into that right wing spot, if available?
Sounds like Jesse Mogg wants it.
Jesus. You know what?
I wouldn't be putting Jesse Mogg back
this in. Is what I hate about Oz rugby at times. It's just, why go to the club that has the Wallabies fullback if you want to play fullback? I hate it. Like, the Waratahs are screaming out for an outside back. Why? Like, I know he's played for the Brumbies before. Maybe he prefers Canberra as a city, which is insane. But there are teams that need a fullback and that would love to have you play every minute. Instead, he's opting to go for the spot where, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, right wing's open then. I think any of them could take it. I'd be happy with any of those 4 that we've named. And even Kellaway. I thought he showed glimpses. And I want you to, you know, make sure that you're prepared for this because you've got a crush on the man, I'm about to say. But he showed glimpses of that Ashley Cooper vibe of just being a very smart footballer, being in the right space, and didn't need to be the quickest out there or anything, but he knew what, I guess, where to be. He's definitely not at Ashley Cooper status. I don't think anyone is.
No one is.
No one is. But he looked like one of those. He can cover a lot of positions, and he looked like he's, you know, quite capable of filling in any role. So he's someone that I'm actually quite keen to see continued in that squad.
Look, issue is that the team must hate him because he was open about 3 times in the first game when he had 5 minutes and didn't pass in the ball.
Oh, we were saying, like, even at
and
the
he was
game,
screaming.
His handprint was still on his thigh that Wednesday because he was slapping it like crazy trying to get that ball out. I couldn't believe it. But, I mean, they won anyway, but He knew where to be. Like, he saw that he had all the acres of space. And maybe that's something that, you know, he just has to work in better with the
Let's not forget, he captained Australian schoolboys on the wing. First ever person to do it. He's one of the, he was one of the best schoolboys going around.
Oh, and
he was a phenomenal player.
Wasn't he technically
very good for the Tars?
Technically, isn't he the most recent leading try scorer of a regular Super Rugby competition? I think he was leading the charge before the COVID ruined the 2020 season. I'll have to double check that, but Davis, he scored like Modern 7 or 8 tries. Yeah,
yeah, he's getting plenty of meat. He's a very good player,
a very good finisher. So yeah, I'm keen to see a bit more of him. Look, we'll wrap up soon. I just want to look at the rugby championship. So we've got 3 games against the All Blacks. We've got 2 games against South Africa. We've got 2 games against Argentina. Just for the fun fact of the week, put this one in your notebooks. 15 of the Wallabies 27 that we used in the French series have never played the Springboks. Right, so there's a lot of the players in that squad that, you know, looked pretty good against this French side. They have never played the Springboks. And then, you know, current world champions, they're a very different beast to a lot of those other teams. New Zealand obviously got the best depth in the world. You know, like they've got all these injuries, all these people going overseas, or mainly Lel Mape. But, you know, they don't have their best squad, but they're still so formidable on paper. So, Cody, what to you is a pass mark for the rugby championship coming up? What do you want to see and how many wins are you expecting? Especially when you factor in, we didn't beat Argentina last year. That was 2 games, 2 draws. So what are you hoping for?
Hoping for?
Yeah.
We're expecting. Okay. Plain sweet.
All right. Easy. Wrap it up.
hoping for, I would cop 4 losses to South Africa and Argentina to win 2 against the All Blacks. That's
oh, definitely.
Statement.
Yeah, get the Bledisloe.
Reclaim the Bledisloe.
That'd be huge.
That's mine.
I mean, 2 games out of the 3 are in New Zealand. We start off at Eden Park, so it's literally as hard as it can get. But that would be massive. And yeah, if we had the luxury of, you know, choosing, I'd definitely swap that.
Personally, I think if South Africa play full strength, I can't see us beating them. Unfortunately, I'll be cheering us to the cows come home, but we don't have a single forward that was making too much of an impact. In our ball running, Tupou was making some very good runs, and Wilson Valentini and Lucan had some like advantage line runs, but no one gets advantage line runs against the South African forward pack. Like, no one does, unless even Artie struggles. So
even their ability to pick off lineouts, you know, like we don't have the strongest lineout going around. Mm. Against that French side, it looks really good. But you're right, like against that South African pack, like they can get any of about 4 or 5 different players up in the air to, you know, pick off a lot of what we're throwing. So, yeah, I think that's why I bring up how few of our players have actually versed them. I think they're probably going to underestimate how much of a challenge it is. And when you factor in that a lot of these guys in our Wallaby squad are quite new, even to Super Rugby, they probably haven't versed that many South African teams. You know, a lot of those Australian teams that have probably only played 1 or 2 of those South African teams before COVID shut down the comp. So there could be a lot of guys out here that don't have a lot of minutes, and guys that, you know, young and promising like Paisami and Angus Bell, they're going to be in the 23 somewhere, you'd think, but they may not have, you know, had more than 2 games against South African. So that does make a massive difference. I think.
Yeah. And you even think like the, like Paisami running into arm. If he's going, doing the X ball, running directly into him, he's just getting held up. And that's a maul. And then there's about 7 other South Africans that come in. Then they bring in, they're starting Quagga Smith now. Like they're playing 5 games against the Lions in theory.
Yeah.
With 2 South African A games. They.
Only 1 A game so against the Lions.
Oh, sorry, 1 against the Bulls.
Yeah.
They're going to come in having the best preseason because they've versed the Lions and then they're versing teams that in theory are easier.
Yeah,
and they'll be traveling and they'll be together for a while. That team's been together. I saw that the Lions team has 535 caps.
Yeah,
as a team versus the Lions has 535 South African caps.
Yeah, no, it's insane.
So and you bring on Malcolm Marks off the bench and Quagga Smith is starting and he just eats pilfers. So it's gonna be crazy.
That's one of the things, and we'll probably dive into it before the Rugby Championship starts, but I've done a bit of digging on the number of caps that the Springboks had sort of before the Rugby World Cup and also looked at sort of the number of caps we've got at the moment. We're in very different stages of the cycle, but I think it's interesting to see, you know, both got coaches around the same time, both got a bit of time to prep leading into it. It'll be something I look at quite interestingly to see how we adapt and how we sort of work our way towards building for that Rugby World Cup, because that does seem to be the big carrot. Look, taking away the Bledisloe Cup hope that you had, or the expectation, I think what I'd really like, and this might be setting the bar too low, but I think it's still quite challenging. I'd like to beat each of the countries once, at least. And that'd be tough.
Twice.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think 2017 or 2018, we drew with South Africa both times. So, like, there's a chance of it happening. But, no, I just think we haven't beaten Argentina under Dave Rennie, so I think it's important we get a win against them. We haven't played South Africa underneath Dave Rennie, but we haven't beaten South Africa in quite a while, just because of 2019 only having the one match, and they were pretty dominant against us. So it'd be great to try and get a win there. And there again, like, just to have these guys beat the All Blacks again would be huge. So I think just, you know, trying to build on some of those wins, because we've got to keep in mind, as confident as I am, and as much as I love that French series, it wasn't the same difficulty level that we'll get coming up in the Rugby Championship. So I think that's important to factor in.
Yeah. Yeah. Two wins over the Argentina, because they are ranked below us, so you can't lose to them. One each over All Blacks and South Africa.
The other thing is, we do have home advantage. Like, the four games against South Africa and Argentina are all on home soil. So realistically, I mean,
that's uncool.
One against South Africa is that's the only reason why I think we've got a chance of beating South Africa at the moment, is because one of them is at Suncorp.
We lost to Argentina at the Gold Coast.
Yeah. let's set some new rules for Rugby Australia right now. No games at Gold Coast. And look, you and I, we went to the Gold Coast most weekends growing up. Like, we love it, but it's not for rugby. And no rugby at Suncorp Newcastle.
Suncorp and Perth. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep it Suncorp and Perth. Real easy. There's one for our Western Force listeners. We love Perth. We're all about it. But no rugby at Gold Coast or Newcastle. One last thing, just because we brought up the box, you're in London at the moment, so you'll be watching the Lions game live, no doubt. Who are you going for? And what do you think the score will be? Or how much do you think the team will win by?
It's a tough one, because you sort of like, I think I'm probably going for the Lions, but I like the way South Africa play and I like their team, but they're just not the most fun team to support. Whereas the Lions are a fun team to support.
Yeah.
And they're like a touring team. But I also think it's a lot harder to get excited for this tour compared to others because of the way it's been run. And should never have gone to South Africa. Should have been played in the UK. Should have gone somewhere else. Like, it's been a very poor effort, I think, personally. I think it'll be very low scoring. If that league team is the actual team, did the Lions pull out an actual team overnight? Or the
not one that I've seen yet, but no. Every chance to this one.
If they're starting Elliot Daly at 13, then South Africa by 6.
You know what? I think my big thing, because I'm a bit with you, I'm not really sold on who I'm going for yet. I hope it's a good game. First and foremost, I'm probably going for the Lions just based off sort of what I'm seeing on Twitter and the different, you know, sort of different interactions I'm seeing online. But I just wish they didn't have any English teams in, because I hate that the Wallabies have done so poorly against England. So I really struggle to cheer for a team that has English players in it at the moment. But both teams look so good. That South African team, I'm really excited, and especially by the players that a lot of people seem to dislike, like Oxen Shea and Quagga Smith. I think they're like, you know, two players that probably shouldn't be starting realistically, but God, they're like just fun people to watch. They're exciting players. I think they bring quite a lot to the team, and they seem like quite nice guys off the pitch as well. Like, they're they don't have that sort of hard man mentality like a Eben Etzebeth, who you'd be too scared to say anything to after the match. Like, they seem quite friendly. So I'll be going for Quagga, but otherwise cheering on the Lions. And I think probably the first test I'll win by a little bit. So I'm keen to see how they go. Might set the alarm for the 2 a.m. get up for that. But anyway.
Well, didn't they say that all the tests are in Cape Town now?
Yeah. Yeah, all in the one spot.
South Africa have a very poor win record in Cape Town.
Well, it's not,
if they were all at Ellis Park, go for it. No.
I think it's all a different stadium now, though, because they're not playing at Newlands. They're playing at Cape Town Stadium. So whether that's, you know, different, you know, record there. The big factor is that they're not playing at altitude anymore. So because it's not, you know, same conditions as either Johannesburg or Pretoria, it's going to be a little bit different. But, well, look, still keen to see that game. And I think that first hit out will tell a lot about the series, because at the moment it's really hard to gauge how strong either side is, because a lot of them, you know, coming in off limited game time or prep, or in case of the Lions, they're sort of pulling their punches in a lot of those warm-up matches, like not really showing their full hand or strategy. But I probably kept you on for too long. Thanks very much for joining, and thanks for coming back on for a chat, because that was probably the first time we spoke about the French series. It's good to get some thoughts out and just sort of see how we think we shaped up, because it's overall very positive. I was really impressed with the series win. I think that's a massive thing for these young team to sort of have under their belt. But I think now the moment is, we saw the Reds go from winning Super Rugby AU to, you know, struggling in the Trans-Tasman, because there was not much time and I think a bit too much confidence, especially from the public. I think it's, you know, got to be careful that we sort of tread that line between, yes, we've got all this confidence, and yes, we're, you know, feeling quite pumped up, but, you know, people online, people that are watching, have to realize that if we don't win against the All Blacks, or if we, you know, get smashed by the All Blacks, that's also not that out of the world, given, you know, the difference in experience at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But it's something to look forward to. It's only, what, 2 weeks away now?
Yep. Just around the corner. Be cheering the Wallabies. And just keen to see who sort of makes that squad. All Blacks have already announced their squad and it looks insanely dangerous. I'll be keen to see which players make it on top of the 27 that played for the Wallabies in the French series. All right.
Indeed.
Well, thanks for listening. And we'll be back again very soon. Bye.
See ya.